violently ill and have terrible side effects, then it can't possibly be killing or controlling all those pesky cancer cells, can it? Isn't cancer virtually impossible to rid unless you load yourself up with large doses of toxic chemicals? After decades of burning and poisoning ourselves with these destructive treatments, the standard of care, we are ingrained to believe this nonsense. I felt the self-blame too. I had abused my insides all my life, thoughtlessly downing foods and drinks that disagreed with me and made me bloated or tired. I too felt I had to be strict and hard on myself with a punishing and grueling diet. Had I in some way been remiss and allowed cancer to develop? Dr. Calibou pressed upon me the need to sort out whatever might be wrong with my intestinal health and to check the nutrient levels in my blood. Now I was through chemotherapy. I knew it was essential to be properly assessed and have my stools checked and my micronutrient fatty acid, vitamin and mineral profiling examined. My medical training had done me a disservice in this department. Diet and my intestines had always taken a back seat, never receiving the attention they desperately needed, as the focus or the reason why other systems in the body go wrong. Many cancer patients will be able to tell you about infection in the gut or in the site where cancer developed, why these prior infections are treated as irrelevant and unacknowledged in oncology is truly astonishing. Oncologists see cancer as a totally organic disease that somehow developed out of nowhere, ignoring all the other infections that came before. There are many different causes of cancer, many from infectious diseases, but most integrative doctors will tell you that every cancer patient at some point has had a problem with their intestinal health. Today, much emerging research is focused on the microbiome, the collection of organisms that live on and in us, and the nature of our symbiotic relationship. Scientists are trying to establish why correcting the microbiome has such a big impact on the health of the cancer patient, no matter where the cancer has developed. Every little crevice on every surface in our bodies is home to legions of tiny microorganisms, and the gut has by far the most. I am not alone in my assumption that my intestines would just deal with dietary abuse, whilst accepting that fatigue, bloating, and irregular bowel movements were perfectly normal. I had not appreciated how easily our gut linings are damaged, particularly in early life, with the use of antibiotics or other supposedly safe drugs, how they might lead to later damage and longer-term systemic effects and disease is only just beginning to be understood. My own gut woes may have stemmed from an infection in my early 20s. I'd been on holiday with my family, windsurfing off a popular tourist beach in Turkey. After a series of failed calve jibes and subsequent face plants, I drank far more seawater than I had intended, and a couple of days later had developed lobar pneumonia in my lungs. The mere act of breathing brought out the searing pain of pleuritis, inflammation of the lung membranes, and if this wasn't torture enough, I had a dose of pericarditis, inflammation of the membranes around the heart, thrown in, which caused severe pain to radiate down from my neck and shoulder into my left arm. I couldn't lie down, so nights were spent sitting up on deck unable to sleep, watching the stars. I really should have been in hospital. A local doctor prescribed a course of crude, uncoated, and strong antibiotics, after which nothing stayed down, not even water. I have never been so thin. I dropped a stone in weight within a week to just over 7.5 stone. All of this in 40 degrees of heat and on a boat. I became completely dehydrated and felt so terrible, I remember thinking that if I fell over the side, I had no intention of saving myself. I would have quite happily slipped beneath the waves, never to return. Those antibiotics must have totally wrecked my gut and upset my microbial ecosystem. I had no clue about probiotic use in those days. No one did. With both good and bad bacteria wiped out, my defenses were at an all-time low. It may well have been at this time that I picked up a parasite. Now I was fighting the specter of cancer, years later. I was aware that the gut was the center of my immunity, and I would not be well until I had fixed it. Re-establishing a good gut balance was a critical part of the jigsaw, as well as mending my damaged insides. I decided periods of intermittent fasting might allow my gut to rest, heal, and reduce any inflammation. As a physiotherapist, it was usual to advise rest and anti-inflammatory treatments such as ice and ultrasound for a damaged body part before the process of rehab. Dr. Kalibu was in favor of intermittent fasting or time-restricted feeding, allowing the intestines to rest after 3 p.m. until the following morning. The rationale being that the liver is more active in the morning and better able to process food. This would also starve the cancer, of course. He explained about the constant turf war going on in our intestines, the balance of our beneficial, commensal, versus bad, pathogenic, bacteria, constantly shifting, particularly when we take antibiotics or eat and drink unhealthy foods. Doctors rarely suggest a course of probiotics after antibiotics or advise staying off sugary foods during treatment. But if the balance shifts the wrong way and pathogenic bacteria become more dominant, they may eventually secrete enough exotoxins to cause a breakdown in the single-cell gut lining. This single-cell thickness in our intestinal walls is all that protects us from infection entering our bodies from the outside. When those cells lining the gut are damaged by exotoxins, inflammation occurs and loosens the tight junctions between the cells. Once these junctions are disrupted, it creates the condition known as leaky gut, or intestinal hyperpermeability syndrome, which, if you mention it, elicits much eye-rolling in the medical community. Because it's not taught in medical schools, and the pharmaceutical companies have yet to develop a drug for it. To many doctors, leaky gut is a condition that doesn't exist, but it is very real indeed, and leaves us easy prey to opportunistic infections, and it can also trigger autoimmune disease. As luck would have it, I was already taking one of the best gut healing compounds as part of my self-treatment. I just didn't know it at the time. Hurrah for berberine! While healthy levels of good bacteria make important nutrients like vitamin K and B, unhealthy levels of pathogenic bacteria create leaky gut, allowing other pathogens and their toxic byproducts easy passage into our bodies. Once inside, they alter the microenvironment around normal stem cells, creating inflammation and thereby abnormal stem cells, which lie at the heart of every cancer. This, I believe, is the root cause of cancer, which, coupled with other resident viruses, yeasts or other pathogens, create a welcoming environment for the cancer stem cells to begin an abnormal metabolism and flourish. "I have your test results," Dr. Kalibu announced in the summer of 2000. "You have really good levels of bifidobacteria and lactobacilli in your lower gut, but I'm afraid you have quite a number of parasites called blastocystis hominis."
"Blasted what?" I said. "Parasites? Gross! How do I get rid of them?"
"Parasites are far more common than you think," he said.
I was amazed to discover just how rife they are among humans, up to 100% in some poorer countries, with infection rates on the rise elsewhere. In the United States, 23% of the total population were infected with Blastocystis hominis in 2000.
"It won't be easy to get rid of it. You are going to have to follow a very strict regime," he added.
Fine. I was following a pretty strict regime already, so in for a penny, in for a pound.
I knew a list of further supplements would be added to my growing compendium.
This protozoal parasite might be the cause of your lowered thyroid results. The two are often connected, he added.
I already had some of the classic symptoms associated with blastocystis hominis infection, the main one being serious fatigue. I'd assumed it was a cervical cancer or my hectic lifestyle, but perhaps this blasted parasite was the real reason. Other common symptoms can include bloating, diarrhea, nausea, flatulence, abdominal pain, hives, and variable bowel habits. Parasites no longer just infect travellers abroad. With our increasingly migrant and urban communities, these little critters can be spread by poor food preparation hygiene, unwashed hands, even via our innocent-looking cats and dogs. There is a strong link between prostate cancer and toxoplasmosis gondii found in our fluffy feline friends. We humans seem to believe we're immune to parasites, somehow superior, that anti-worming is unnecessary for all but our pets. But without paying attention to simple hygiene measures, we're at the mercy of these tiniest of creatures, be they bacteria, protozoa, mycoplasma, viruses, parasites, even calcifying nanoparticles, the smallest of the lot. Isabella Wentz, pharmacist, sufferer of Hashimoto's thyroiditis and best-selling author of The Hashimoto's Protocol, also had blastocystis hominis. She blames the infection in part for causing her thyroid condition and says she never felt completely well until she eradicated it. Wentz found 35% of her clients tested positive for blastocystis hominis, making it the most common infection associated with Hashimoto's. But most medics consider it a commensal organism and do not see a need to treat it, despite new evidence pointing to its pathogenicity. Wentz has investigated the wee critter extensively. It's known to cause multiple food sensitivities, she writes, while true food sensitivities will typically result in a resolution of symptoms once the food is removed. People infected with blastocystis hominis will have the opposite. They develop multiple food sensitivities, and once they eliminate one food, they'll develop another sensitivity. I too had discovered a sensitivity to wheat and eggs, but also dairy, tomatoes, and citrus. Cutting out inflammatory foods I knew was imperative to my cancer-busting program, and I'm certain now that every cancer patient should be routinely tested and treated to eradicate parasites. Re-establishing a healthy gut and ridding myself of this intruder was not an easy job. It involved dedication to the cause, but I knew it was key. Without a properly functioning gut, I would never hope to have a properly functioning thyroid or immune system. I was never going to get a complete recovery without fixing those. If I had thought for a moment that the conventional medical profession would take the parasite infection seriously, I might have benefited from a short-term hit of a combination of antibiotics alongside my supplements. But I was concerned that taking these might have created further dysbiosis, although with hindsight, it would have only been a temporary imbalance, easily rectified with the correct pre- and probiotics. In the end, what worked for me was several months of the following. An anti-parasitic supplement formula containing wormwood, black walnut, cloves, olive leaf, garlic, grapefruit extract, and uva ursi. Betaine hydrochloride to increase acidity in my stomach. Proteolytic enzymes that digest protein, including bromelain from pineapples and papain from papaya seeds, taken between meals. Raw garlic cloves crushed in an avocado dip, zinc, Mahonia aquifolium, berberine, fish oils, freshly ground flaxseed. The proteolytic enzymes are believed to digest the protein shell that makes up the bodies of parasites, making them less able to resist treatment. The enzymes must be taken between meals, otherwise